A new energy shock is gripping the world, one that experts warn could eclipse even the oil crisis of the 1970s. Over the past weeks, global oil prices have surged by roughly 30%, driven by the war the United States and Israel launched against Iran. That's a conflict that has steadily pulled more countries into its orbit. And with the Strait of Hormuz, one of the planet's most critical energy corridors, now effectively closed, and it has been closed for a couple of weeks now, the pressure on global supply chains is intensifying by the day. So, how are countries responding? More specifically for our podcast, how is Germany responding? And could these overlapping crises reshape the country's long-standing debates about renewables, energy independence, and even nuclear power? Today on Berlin Briefing, I'm joined by my colleague Bernd Riegert, and together we'll examine Germany's emergency measures and the political calculations behind them. And we've also got Robin Wagner on the line, who's a member in the Bundestag for the opposition Green Party. Very good to see you, Robin. Thank you very much for joining. And we have Loyal Campbell, who's a senior research fellow with the German Council on Foreign Relations, knows a lot about energy, climate change, and can fill us in on all the details. Let's start with you, Robin. Have you been to the pump today yet?
No, I have not. But if I had, I would have seen the climbing prices for petrol at the moment, which obviously is a problem for people living in rural constituencies.
That is correct. We actually did send a reporter out. Lauren Schwarz went to a petrol station here in Berlin, not just in rural areas, everywhere. People are complaining about rising prices. To get the discussion started, let's just hear what people had to say here in Berlin.
I have to drive. I'm disabled. I can't walk far. I rely on my car. What's the point? Refineries still aren't being transparent. They raise prices however they want, just to fill their own pockets. And our government, the politicians, they earn 30,000 euros a month. They don't need to worry about this at all.
The way that energy costs always fluctuate and are very dependent on the markets, I wish we could switch to alternatives more quickly. I can't really afford it, but I have no choice. I work as a taxi driver. I need fuel. Otherwise, I can't make a living.
I can manage the higher prices. I had already started driving less, and that's paying off now. Canceling trips, sharing fuel costs, that's what has changed in any case. Yeah, especially people who have to commute a lot, who need a lot of petrol. I think they're having a pretty hard time right now, and all those who can should perhaps change their mode of transport.
So economic experts in Germany are also warning that this war is making us poor. Bernd, the German government has essentially recognized that this is a very, very serious situation. Can you tell us how have they been addressing this big problem?
Well, the new figures are out. Economic institutes say that the growth rate will halve this year. It was already low. The expectations were not good, but now it's at 0.6%, and inflation will rise. So these are alarming signs also for the economic minister, Katharina Reiche, who's trying to find some measures. But she also admits that there are no short-term measures on the energy market that would really help the people at the pump now. To give them the money back with some relief money or taxes, that does not work, the government says, because in the end, somebody has to pay these higher prices. If you do it with the taxpayers or directly at the pump, that actually doesn't matter. Even if the state gives the money back, the state has to pay it, also taxpayers, or we have to go into debt again, like we did in the COVID crisis, to do this relief. In the end, somebody has to pay it, and that will be us. So the war, actually, in Iran is our war. The impact is our felt by us, not as the chancellor said, maybe, or not the chancellor, the minister for defense said 3 weeks ago, it's not our war. This is only partly true, only on the military side. Economically, it's our war now. And people are struggling to come up with some measures. After Easter, the minister announced she will have come up with some new measures. But what can that be? That's the big question.
Okay, we sent a reporter out today because new measures did come into effect today. So when the war first broke out, of course, you know, there was a people, the companies actually benefited from the fluctuation. And there were situations where certain mineral oil companies actually raised the price up to 50 times a day. On average, even the federal government says that we had an average price fluctuation per day of 22 times. That was, of course, extremely challenging for everybody who needs those vehicles, which is why the economy minister, who you just mentioned, then said, OK, we need fast measures. And today those measures came into force. We're recording on the 1st of April. So in Germany, now the number of daily price increases is only one. You can't raise your price 22 times. Then you have a fixed time of day. So at 12 noon, the prices change if they change, and then you can reduce them any time. That stays the same, essentially. And there are huge fines. You will have to pay 100,000 euros.
That might keep the fluctuation at bay, or you have more oversight what is happening, but it will not lower the price of the oil, actually. And the companies will now try to heighten the price at noon, maybe by, I don't know, 5-10 cents, and then go down slowly. But in the end, the overall price in the long run or over weeks and months will not be influenced by this measures. I mean, it's just a window dressing to tell people that there's more transparency on the market, but the price itself is not impacted by that. The price follows instantly the oil price on the oil market worldwide. So also the influence we have by these measures on the oil price worldwide is very limited. And the refiners in the oil companies say we just give to the consumers what we have to pay. Some people say they make windfall profits. That is also disputed if that's true or not. The only thing you can say is that prices rise very high, very soon after a price shock, but they go slowly down. So if the Iran war ends, it will take months until the price is actually at the level we have seen before the war.
I want to bring Loyal Campbell in, who's, of course, an expert on all things, you know, energy mix, etc. Is the German government, from what you're observing, is it reacting appropriately to the current energy shock? What would you say?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. I think it's hard to identify this in just a domestic lens. I think there's competing priorities and objectives across the security, energy, climate, and economic sphere. So on the domestic energy price, obviously higher energy prices, higher commodity prices, they impact everything. I think some of the most directly felt things are obviously transport, but food eventually will become more expensive, especially as freight gets more expensive or fertilizer gets more expensive. And this goes back into a conversation about what's being targeted in the region specifically. So if you're having refineries or fertilizer plants be hit, then those prices go up accordingly, but it takes a little bit longer for them to kick in, especially if there's uncertainties about the outcome. But in terms of how the government is responding, I think it's been quite interesting, especially because the German government hasn't responded in one specific way. It's been taking different leads as well from other European countries. So you could see, for example, the British, the French, and the Spanish and the Italians have taken different measures to prevent or to restrict American jets or American airplanes from using their airspace or from using their bases. This is interesting because it's one way to increase the pressure on the United States, who is one of the major actors, who is one of the biggest actors in this conflict. So this was one way to encourage pressure for them to exit. But I guess this isn't necessarily tied to the German government's direct domestic policy, but it's trying to create an outcome that would actually have an off-ramp. And I think that this is where it ends up being challenging, because this is one of the only ways or one of the only spheres where there's actually able to influence the outcome in any meaningful way, because Europe doesn't have the security force or the military to intervene more directly in the region.
Not just it doesn't have the means, it also doesn't really see it, like Ben says, as its military war, right? So Robin Wagner from the Greens, your party has, of course, called for the expansion of renewable energy in Germany for a very long time. But now we're seeing that it's taking a long time to expand renewables. The economy minister is floating the idea of open-mindedness when it comes to technology. Nuclear power, she says, is also something that shouldn't be ruled out. And where does that leave us when we look at the problem that we now have as being a shortage of oil and gas? Isn't that something that the German government should be focusing its efforts on now, how to get access to cheap oil and gas?
Yeah, but it shouldn't only focus on it at the moment when the crisis is there. It seems as we are repeating the same mistake again and again. And I mean, since 22, we should have learned in Germany that international crisis causes problems on the energy market and energy problems also in Germany. And we have to find ways to deal with that. And the only way in order to become more independent from this volatility on the international markets linked to global crisis is renewable energy, which is freedom energy, as a German minister from the Liberal Party once framed it. So renewable energy means freedom from volatility, but also means freedom from pressure by some regimes that we always face. And it's not only renewable energy, it's also concerning raw materials and things like that. But now we have it on the renewable energy issue. And it seems like the German government has really taken a shift back from what the previous government, where the Greens were part of, learned. For example, they are discussing about, do we need electrification of cars and the pressure, or do we want to have more fuel-driven cars in the future? Do we really need to make big shifts in the heating of houses, or do we need the 65% quota for renewable energy in house heating and all those issues? They reduce the expenditure of renewable energy in the market. And these are the things that go in the wrong direction. So we need to strengthen our renewable energy in Germany in order to become more independent and not so vulnerable from these crises. And the discussion on nuclear energy, I mean, we can have it, but it seems to me like it's a zombie discussion that pops up ever again and again. Although the energy companies in Germany clearly said that there is no way to bring them back online again in Germany, and it would take such a long time to produce nuclear energy again. So it's better to focus the time and the cost that it would take to produce nuclear energy to produce renewable energy, which is our only source of sovereignty. And I mean, even with nuclear energy, Europe is dependent from Russia. That is the reason why we cannot sanction Rosatom properly, because other European countries are dependent from Russian uranium. So we see there's only one way out of this. It's not a short-term solution, but there should be a clear focus of the government to increase our sovereignty. And that is not only due to climate change issues. I mean, as a Green, I could talk all day about climate change on this thing, but it's about security of our country, and it's about economic security we need in our country. And that is something that everyone in the big cities, in the rural constituencies, in the production, we can see it everywhere in the country that we need this sovereignty in Germany to protect our wealth and our security.
And Loyal, would you agree that the discussions around what the best energy mix is a very special one in Germany, because the issue seems to be so emotionally charged? When you compare the discussions in Germany to that in other countries are much more interest driven, right? And here it really is a discussion of, are you a greenie who is in favour of wind power, or are you somebody who knows how to drive a fast car, therefore relying on fossil fuels? Is that something that is representative of Germany?
Hi, I'm Kate Laycock, host of DW's weekly European current affairs programme Inside Europe. Our correspondents were there when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Balkans wars broke out, and when Britain voted to leave the European Union. Now the continent is changing again, and we're rising to the challenge, bringing you a combination of expert analysis and on-the-ground reporting. Join us every Thursday.
I think before 2022, that might have been more accurate. I definitely think the conversation has evolved quite considerably since the invasion of Ukraine, the increased attention to the security risks composed by supply chains, cyber vulnerabilities, and otherwise, and increasingly more the issues of oil and gas from the Middle East. I think that this the framing is much less around greenies versus, or if you as you want to call them that, versus, you know, the conventional people that want to drive a fast car. As someone who really appreciates German automotive culture, I think that this is definitely something that I can generally endorse. But still, I think there's saying having fun versus recognizing where dependency is causing severe economic damage, especially when crisis after crisis has showed this vulnerability. I think this is just the most recent crisis where we can see that because Germany doesn't even import a lot of its oil and gas from the Middle East, but because it's so heavily dependent and so heavily integrated into the global economy and the European economy, we are very, very vulnerable to this. You know, and it's interesting to look at the case of China. China is much more dependent on Middle Eastern oil, but because they've invested so heavily into the electrification of road transport with electric vehicles, to a degree, they've reduced their dependency much more than it was 10 years ago. And this means they're still more vulnerable than Germany or Europe is right now. However, but if you look at it versus where they were at 10 years ago, the renewables and electric vehicles have been a very, very, very interesting combination that helps reduce the energy imports. Their concern is, one, the Straits of Hormuz, but also the Straits of Malacca. But in general, this is an interesting example where we can see that reducing demand for oil and gas, especially in sectors where it's not needed, right? I mean, especially in sectors where there's clear and viable alternatives, something like kerosene or jet fuel or otherwise, it's a bit more difficult to have a full renewable in there at the moment, but this is where innovation and investment is really important so that we can have much more competitive things. And for example, like in the chemical sector or in the fertilizer sector, whether this be with green hydrogen or otherwise, these are where a lot of innovation is still needed, but there's lots of alternatives that are immediately available that can help reduce demand in a significant way. And I think there's a lot of lessons learned from 2022 that showed that gas demand could be cut from certain places without having too much of an impact. I mean, after a certain point, you run out of low-hanging fruit, so you'd have to start going after the big demand segments. But still, I think that the framing around having renewables as being freedom energy or energy sovereignty, this is not green policy per se anymore. I think this has become common mainstream policy and a mainstream position because, for a very, very interesting historical anecdote, I think in the 1970s, I can't remember which president it was, but there was a president of the United States who was a Republican at the time who actually installed solar panels on top of the White House. And this was during one of the first OPEC crisis, I believe. So the interesting thing there is that 50, 60 years ago, the United States president, a Republican at the time, during a similar crisis in the Middle East, was actually saying that solar panels on the White House would help reduce oil imports. And I mean, like, these solar panels were nowhere near as efficient or cost effective as the ones we have today. But the difference there is that they were probably made in the United States. So you don't have the security, the supply chain security issues that you currently face with China. And this isn't to say that those aren't important. Those are very serious risks and very serious challenges that we need to account for.
No, Bernd wanted to jump in.
Yeah, it's all true what you're saying, but in the current crisis, renewables don't help. If you look at the energy consumption in Germany right now, 70 to 75% of all overall energy consumption is coming from fossil fuels. We are good in producing electric power with renewables already. In the transport sector, buildings and industry, heavy industry, you need still fossils, and they need them now, and not in 10 years. So we have to do, or the government has to come up with some measures now. And they don't have them. The only thing they can say, the war has to end soon. And to put pressure on the administration in Washington and also on the administration in
Israel.
Jerusalem, because the war is not only fought by Mr. Trump, there are others involved. So structural reforms and renewables are needed, but they don't help now. And it's very, very slow process to get from fossil fuels in industry supplies to renewables, because gas, natural gas, for example, is also a commodity. Helium fertilizers is made out of gas. It's not burned. They need the gas as a commodity, so it's rather difficult to replace that.
And this is something that I asked Robin about, that I would like to hear from you, you know, as well, that you have to do both at the same time, right, Robin? You have to try and expand renewables because it is the way forward, as Lyle just explained. But at the same time, you need access to oil and gas right now to fix the current crisis. And I would like to just hear your point of view. Do you agree with what Lyle just said, that it is no longer an ideological discussion in Germany? Because that is not the impression that I'm getting when I speak to some of the very conservative politicians who don't seem to agree that this is the way forward. How do you experience that as somebody who has to try and find compromises, excuse me, also in Parliament, in Bundestag, talking to your colleagues? Is there something where German parliamentarians agree that this is the way forward?
Yeah, I hope it was something like a non-ideological discussion, but it is unfortunately not. And maybe we should have framed some things differently and they would have worked out better with the conservatives. For example, when we're talking about the long and middle term measures of reducing the dependency of production industry, or we have the Climate and Transformation Fund, which is used for that in order to also reduce the gas dependency where it is possible. It's not possible everywhere, but where it's possible, we can reduce it. And we should have the support by government for that. In the previous government, with the Greens in it, we installed the Climate and Transformation Fund. Maybe we should have named it like Security for Our Industry Fund, and then perhaps it would have been okay for the Conservatives. But somehow they took the word climate in it and made an ideological debate on it. But this is something we clearly see now where we should invest in order to reduce the dependency of industry. And then we have it on all the other measures as well. I mean, we had the debates concerning heat pumps in the buildings. Robert Habeck came up with a law on
the former economy minister from the Greens.
Former economy minister, which was more like reforming a law that was there before. But in order to have more electric heat pumps in the buildings, in order to reduce the dependency from fossil energy and shift more to electricity on that. And there was a highly ideological debate on that. Then people did not build as much heat pumps as would have been necessary. Now we see, facing the energy crisis we have at the moment, now we see the numbers going up again with people saying, oh, perhaps we need those heat pumps and should build them. It would have been better if the new conservative and social democratic government had not had this campaign against it, and we would have had a clear path towards more energy like that. And so perhaps, maybe it's also for us Greens, perhaps we should not so much talk about the climate change issue on climate crisis on that, and just use the words that the conservatives understand and talk about the global security and dependency things, because both arguments are true. We need the electrification for climate issues and we need it for our own sovereignty. And perhaps the political debate would be easier if we would focus on the other thing. But also as adults, the conservatives could see that it is something that is in the for the good of the German economy and for the good of the people to work on that. But in the end, of course, it's clear there are long-term solutions. We have to work on them, but we also need the short-term solutions. For example, we should have had more gas in the gas storages in Germany, but the energy minister did not seem to focus so much on having it in there. And I don't know, perhaps there are other measures for that we could have in the short term. I also do not have all the answers for that, but we need short-term answers, we need middle-term answers and long-term answers. But we should not stop doing the long and middle-term answers just because we need short-term answers as well at the moment. And we had that in 2022. We had a demand for short-term answers, but we also did the long-term ones. And we managed quite well to come through the crisis of the dependency from Russian energy.
Yeah, and I want you both, Robin and Lyle, to already think about some of the most important short-term answers now, because I want to end this podcast episode on a constructive note. Just do a little brainstorming now. But I want to ask Bernd in the meantime, because you were rolling your eyes when Robin just spoke about the gas reserves.
Yeah, but you have to make clear that there's no shortage of gas right now in Germany or Europe. We are not dependent on actually physical delivery of gas from the Middle East. This goes more to Asia. So in Asia, we have a shortage. But this shortage in Asia drives our prices up. So we have the price crisis here. We have enough gas, but it's too expensive. That's the problem. So the gas storage by the government is not meant for a price crisis. It's meant for a physical shortage, and that is not there. But in summer, the government and also the mineral oil companies have to fill up these gas supplies, these
reserves
again to be prepared for the winter. And this gets really expensive then, because then they have to pay the high gas prices. And this is also a problem. So nobody knows exactly who is responsible, who will buy then. This will be also very interesting how that turns out. It can be very expensive for the government, but also the companies are obliged by law to buy something, and then we will see how that goes. But the shortage is not here yet. It depends all on how long the war goes on, and then also the shortage may come around to us. And the prices are also going up in the US, although the US is an exporter of gas, but still at the pump Americans pay more. So this is not, it's related, but it's not intertwined completely.
And again, we're recording on the 1st of April, so who knows what Donald Trump is going to say in his speech that we're expecting in a couple of hours' time. We can't factor that into this discussion, but I want to end, like I said, with some recommendations. What should be the main focus of any political leader in Germany right now? And I'll start with you, Robin.
Yeah. First of all, there should, of course, be an end of the war in the Middle East, not only because of energy here and energy in the world, but because of the people affected by it. And as much as I wish another regime in Iran, there clearly is no plan how to solve that. And there is nothing more to achieve in this war. So this is the one thing on the foreign policy and security policy thing to stop that. And then the government in Germany needs to focus on some domestic issues, which is antitrust law concerning the prices of fuel, but also having the cheap tickets for public transportation again that we installed. We had this ticket of €9 a month during the energy crisis caused by Russia and Russian's war. And this is something we could use again in this time, and we should use it. At least it's a big solution for those in the municipal areas, and also for those in rural areas who have the public transportation. And then government needs to find ways for those in rural areas in order to be able to buy the fuel.
And Lyle, what's your recommendation?
Yeah, thank you very much. But I think I wanted to go back and say that there is no real immediate solution, because the dependency is there, and because it's a global dependency. There's really no way out of this, especially as long as the war is continuing. So I would echo the comment saying that ending the escalation, especially targeting energy infrastructure, is the foremost priority. And I think efforts from European leaders, and Germany can be involved in this, to make the war and make the American operations, or the American and Israeli operations in Iran, more costly, whether this be restricting airspace access or restricting landing bases. This, I think, is a good positive direction and a good positive statement saying that we don't support this war. We weren't consulted. We're not engaged on this. But I think going back to the importance of renewables or the importance of energy independence quite generally, I think it's also very important to kind of take this as it is and see that depending too much on imported oil and gas, especially from volatile and unreliable regions, is a serious risk. And there's a lot of uncertainty around this. And I think that this is something that we've been trying to pretend that globalization is great, and that wars can't start out of nowhere, and that the United States is a consistent insurer and reliable provider of global maritime security. I mean, yeah, the track record on this has been quite good. But, you know, when things go south, as they are now, just because the president of the United States decided to initiate something with Mr. Netanyahu, I think that this ends up being a serious consideration of how we need to engage and reinforce our own security interests. And I think this isn't directly the topic of the conversation, but I think something very interesting to follow is how Ukraine and been involved here. because Ukraine has been under attack. Ukraine's energy infrastructure has been under attack by these Iranian and Russian drones for the past, you know, several years. And the, as far as many analysts are concerned, the foremost experts in the world on defending against these Shahed drones are the Ukrainians. And this is really interesting because expensive Western military tech is not able to defend this infrastructure. And I think this ends up being a really, really serious consideration going forward is, one, how are we able to ensure protection of our own infrastructure against similar attacks if Russia were to initiate some? Not to say that they are in the short term, but I think some analysts would say their time horizon would be 2027 or 2030, depending on who you ask. And I think getting the Ukrainians more involved here will be very, very important. And facilitating these mutual defense or these defense agreements between Ukraine and these Gulf states is also very, very interesting and directly in Europe's interests. And I think this is something Germany should be definitely supporting, because if the Gulf states have a significant flow of capital, investing this into expanding Ukrainian defense production, especially on key new tech like drones, is a very, very interesting opportunity, because it takes because it can take away some of the fiscal responsibility for Ukrainian defense away from the European Union, especially when we're facing an energy crisis. This is not an insignificant sum. It's also interesting to see to what extent this might change the Gulf's position vis-a-vis Russia. And that is, again, something I think German foreign policy decision makers should be keeping in mind, because further isolating Russia away from other traditional partners is definitely in our long-term security interests, especially if we want to have stable economic security within Germany and in Europe. However, these, again, are all mostly long-term ideas to have in mind. As far as the immediate short term, there's very little we can do other than increasing pressure on the United States and Israel to end the escalation and end the targeting of energy infrastructure. Doing this is the only thing that can provide stability, especially in the immediate term.
Yeah, and that wasn't exactly a short answer or a short recommendation, but very much appreciated, Loyal. Lots of valuable food for thought in there, and definitely something that we will definitely pick up in one of the future episodes. Any last thoughts, Bernd?
Yes, save energy. The only thing that lowers the price is less demand. So we did that during the COVID crisis. Can we do it again? Drive less, heat less? I don't know.
So let us know what you think, what the best ways out of this current energy crisis are. How is your government dealing with it? Send us your comments wherever you found us, and make sure that you tune in again. Also, make sure if you haven't done so already that you subscribe to our wonderful newsletter that comes out once a week, and that gives you also some positive news or stories from around Germany. So until next time, thank you all very much for joining us. Thank you to Robin and Loyal on the line, and thank you to Bernd here and to our production team. Until next time.